The Joe Finnegan Show on Shannonside Northern Sound.
Shannonside Northern Sound. Northern Sound.
In the last 12 months, we have debated and discussed, in great detail, it must be said, civil unions, civil partnerships, gay marriage, at least on two or three occasions in the last 12 months. And of course, Fianna Fáil, prior to the last general election, made it very clear that they will, in time, legislate for those who feel that they are at a disadvantage because they are involved in a same-sex relationship. Disadvantage when it comes to things like succession rights receiving and getting full recognition for their relationship would mean that in areas of taxation or what have you, they would get a fairer deal. Equality is also, of course, very, very important when it comes to people who are involved in a same-sex relationship. But recently, I was reading a very interesting article in the newspapers where the argument was put forward that those who are calling for the introduction of civil unions, civil partnership, gay marriage into Irish society, if it were to happen, the new legislation as such could be open to a different kind of, taxation abuse or the abuse of the system or whatever. And we've decided to talk about this on the programme this morning because I think this will make very interesting listening for a lot of people out there. Tony, good morning to you.
Morning.
And thank you so much for taking our call this morning. I take it you've researched this in great detail. You're one of those who contributed to this article in the Irish Times on Monday. Yes. And you're of the view that the recognition of gay marriage would discriminate against other kinds of partnerships and would be open to abuse. Take us through your concerns.
Well, the basic point about marriage, or I think as far as the debate and gay marriage is concerned, is that if a marriage is recognised, whether it's conventional or the other, along with it comes a number of tax breaks, and you've alluded to them briefly, you know, like the opportunity to be taxed as a single unit rather than individually, tax-free inheritance of assets between spouses, continued payment of a pension of a surviving spouse, and then there are the other next of kin issues. Now, those are real tax benefits. And you have to start by saying, well, why do they exist? Why should married couples get tax benefits?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a very real reason for that. And that is because from the state's point of view, the purpose of a marriage is the procreation and raising of responsible future citizens. And when you have children in the picture, usually one spouse has to spend more time at home looking after or raising the family and less time earning. That's usually the wife, but it could be the husband. So as a kind of a compensation for more time spent rearing, less time spent earning, these tax concessions exist.
Right, so it's now, the state recognizing the sacrifice that one part of the relationship has to make so as to rear the children, mind them, look after them, get them to school or what have you. And also it's the state recognizing the fact that there is a cost involved.
Yes. I mean, the tax breaks don't, of course, pay for the full cost, but they contribute. And with the tax break, you know, every dollar, every euro in a tax break that somebody doesn't pay means someone else has to pay it, and someone else who actually is not availing of it. So you have to say, well, what's the payback? Why should you? And the payback is that two things. One, the state continues to exist and doesn't become extinct through lack of babies and children. And the other is that responsible future citizens come up and are able to contribute to society in the future. Now, if you talk about gay unions, whether you want to call it marriage, union, partnership, whatever, you have to say, well, why should those tax breaks be extended to gay partners whose primary purpose is not to procreate and raise children? And what's the payback there? And I would suggest that there's actually very little payback. Okay. There is a bit of a payback in that perhaps there's less promiscuity around, and some people would say that's a good thing. But it's not to compare with the payback of procreating and raising responsible future citizens for the good of the country and everyone.
So you feel, therefore, that if we do have, and it's surely only a matter of time, recognition in the form of civil partnership or civil union or what have you, it will be open to abuse, where it's in people's interests financially to say, well, we are officially in a partnership, we're living together, and by doing so, they could abuse the tax system.
Well absolutely, because if once you have gay unions and they're getting tax breaks, what is to stop, you know, the two elderly brothers living together in the country somewhere deciding, well, they'd like the same tax breaks, thank you very much. And the only way you could kind of say that, prevent that from happening, is to be very specific that this is available only for gay couples, which means then you're in the strange situation of almost mandating gay sex or something as a condition of getting tax breaks. And I think that's deeply unjust to and extraordinary, but it's deeply unjust to other couples who would, in my view, have an equal right to claim these tax breaks. And in the same way also, by the way, not contribute very much in return for the
right,
tax
but break. just before I move on to our next guest, are you telling me therefore, for example, childless couples or couples who make a decision from day one that we don't want children, we are living together, man and woman, heterosexually,
yes,
but we don't want children, do you feel therefore they should be punished for not having children? When I say punished, I mean punished through the taxation system.
I think that's a difficult area, and there is some. You could make an argument for trying to find a fair way to perhaps deny them the marital tax breaks. I don't quite know how you'd do that.
But of course, you're.
Laws need to be made to meet the common circumstance, not the exception.
Right, but you're of the view that as far as the state... Yeah, but you quite firmly believe that the basis of your argument here is that in the eyes of the state, marriage is all about procreation. In other words, as you mentioned yourself, children, rearing them to become in time responsible citizens of the state.
Yes, procreating and raising them, yes.
Okay. Stay where you are, Tony.
Malcolm
Byrne, or should I say Councillor Malcolm Byrne, is a Fianna Fáil member of Goree Town Council. He was first elected in the 1999 local elections and was re-elected in 2004, and in recent times has become, I suppose, a voice for the gay community. Good morning to you, Malcolm.
Good morning, Joe.
And thank you for holding there. I know that you, like so many of us, you probably read the article in the Times this week, and Tony put forward his views. Your reaction first and foremost, because I think he has prefaced all his remarks by stating quite clearly this isn't necessarily an anti-gay thing, it's just basically something that he's highlighting in relation to our taxation system.
Mm-hmm. Well, unfortunately, I think that Tony has started off on the basis of a number of false premises. If you think about why most people get married, and I even think about, you know, my own parents or some of your listeners or friends or people that you know, the reason as to why you know, they get married, or indeed if they decide that they want to spend the rest of their lives together, is because they love each other. It's because they care about somebody, they want to spend their life with them, they want to do things together, and
children are a bonus.
Well, it's part of it. Some people obviously get married in terms of because they want to have children, but it's a bonus. And the state recognises the fact, you know, that commitment is there. Now, Tony made, which to me is a very bizarre argument, that, you know, that if you allow for gay unions or gay marriage or whatever language you use, and I don't want to get too hung up in the language issue just yet, but if you use that, that's what you will have, is you will have a lot of gay people who will decide that they're going to avail of this purely for tax benefits. Now, to me, that's blatant nonsense.
But that's human nature for some, though. In other words...
That's the point, and you said for some, and it's interesting that one of Tony's last points was, and he can correct me if I misquote him, but he said that laws are there to meet the common circumstance and not the exception. And yes, there will be some very small numbers of people who may decide to avail of legislation in order to get tax breaks. That will equally apply to, you know, straight married couples as it would to gay couples who decide to show commitment to each other. But for the overwhelming majority of couples, regardless of their sexual orientation, the reason as to why, you know, they stand in front of their family and friends and in front of the state and they say, yes, I care about this person, I commit this person, is because they love them, because they care about them. Of course you get people who marry each other for entirely the wrong reasons, and that's the exception. But just because, you know, somebody marries somebody else for their money, does that mean that, you know, the whole basis of recognition should be denied to them?
It's the spirit of the law, Tony. In other words, we have people marrying each other to get citizenship. There are those who will say that women in centuries past and maybe still today marry men for their money, and vice versa, by the way.
Yes.
And as Malcolm has mentioned there, the same will probably happen if this new legislation were to happen and if it's put in place. Of course, at times, people will try and abuse it, but that's the same no matter who you are, where you are, what you are.
Well, let me just deal with a couple of things. Malcolm is quite right. Of course, people walk up the aisle because they love each other. That's what is foremost in their minds, and I don't doubt it would be the same with gay couples. But that's what the individuals do. But we're now talking about what the state does, and from the state's point of view, when people walk up the line, up the aisle, they are given tax benefits because the chances are they're going to be able and are going to procreate and raise responsible future citizens. That's nothing to do with...
But I don't think people ever take that into account when it comes to making a decision about marriage.
Isn't the case where I say,
well, I marry you because I love you and I want to spend the rest of my life with you, and boy, the tax breaks are great.
No, of course they are. That's not what I'm saying. I'm evidently not saying clearly enough. Mm. What I'm saying is, the individuals marry for love, but the state grants the tax benefits for its own interest in procreating and raising future citizens.
That
option is not available. If the union is a gay one.
But it may be through adoption. Sorry, Malcolm?
Okay, we'll come to adoption.
I want to deal with specifics.
Just let Malcolm come in.
Why the state has particular tax policies, and in terms of all of us who are citizens of a state, and the reason as to why we're citizens of a state is we enter into an agreement that we're going to live together, we're going to live by a particular set of rules, and among those rules are there's rules relating to taxation, which will fund things which are in our common interest. There are things, Tony, that you and I will pay for, from which we will derive absolutely no benefit. For an individual who has no children, in one sense, they don't directly benefit from, you know, primary or second level education of other children, but the state as a whole happens to to benefit from that. Those who are working in the private sector, you know, they're paying taxes for some public sector services and for some public sector workers. As part of the state, we all benefit, and that's where the state tax policy evolves. The state recognises the fact that, look, where people choose to live together, to set up a relationship, to get married, that there are benefits in terms of people cooperating in that regard, and therefore particular incentives are provided. The issue with regard to gay civil unions, which has been raised, is primarily about ensuring that gay couples have the same rights when it comes to issues like pensions, when it comes to issues like tax, when it comes to issues such as inheritance. And I don't think that it's particularly fair that two men or two women who happen to have committed to each other for 20, 30 years in the current situation. Mm. You know, they may have been sharing a house for that period.
And they're in limbo, technically.
They're technically in limbo.
Yeah.
What the legislation which the government is bringing forward this March, and which has, in principle, the support of all of the political parties in Leinster House, obviously the detail will have to be worked out, will provide recognition for... you know, those pieces of legislation. And it should be noted, I mean, the points that Tony tried to raise, the government set up a commission known as the Colley Commission, where it took on board a whole range of views, including some of the views which Tony expressed, and it came down and it said, look, this issue has to be resolved. We have to deal with issues from the point of view of equality and fairness. If Tony wants to make the argument, and I don't accept it, by the way, that the whole purpose of marriage is for procreation, and that and rather than procreation, I think it should more be about the issue about raising children, because there are many families out there who may not be able to procreate, but who you know, have adopted kids or who have fostered kids, and they make excellent parents. I think, you know, the key issue with regard to children, and it has to be at the centre of all of our policy relating to children, is what is in the best interest of the child. I mean, I have been very fortunate in the sense that, you know, my parents are 35 years married. This year they brought up five of us. I had a very happy childhood. But families come in different shapes and sizes. You know, there are many kids who are brought up where, you know, by a widow or a widower. They're brought up by a single parent. Some kids are brought up by their grandparents. In certain circumstances, relationships and marriages break down. And you can have new relationships formed. In some cases, kids are brought up by gay parents.
All right,
and what's most crucial in all of that is that the interests of the child. And so long as the child's interests are best protected, that's the most important thing. There are certainly gay people who would not make good parents. Equally, there are plenty of straight people who do not make good parents.
Good point. Final word, Tony. You just wanted to refer to adoption there.
Well, gays adopting kids are a bit like heterosexuals not procreating. It's the exception, not the rule. And secondly, it's not the purpose of a gay union. It's not the purpose. Cannot be procreating and rearing cannot be the purpose of a gay union, almost by definition. So
why not, Tony? I don't understand the logic. The logic of that.
Gays cannot procreate.
But I accept that. But are you saying that just because somebody can procreate?
I mean, adoption. Yes, that is, of course, it's important.
But just because somebody can procreate, Tony, doesn't necessarily mean that they're particularly good at raising children.
Mm-hmm.
That's correct.
And why should they be at an advantage even within the heterosexual community? You're making the point that we should regard those who have to adopt as almost, in a replacement scenario to those who can have children naturally. You know, they're almost second best, in other words. That's the point you're making,
John. No, I wouldn't say second best, but what the state needs, it needs future citizens, first of all, to be procreated and then raised and marriage.
But does that make them, but in the eyes of the state, does that make them a better unit than the family who adopt?
Well, the family who adopt will not by definition create future citizens. They can do so through adoption. If you don't procreate, you don't have a future society.
I'm sorry, Joe. I really have to take Tony up on that. That to me is the height of nonsense.
I was going to say because
for adopted, I mean, just because you can procreate does not mean that you're able to raise a child. There are many families out there
who
cannot.
Yeah.
That's the logic of your argument.
Unless you want Irish society to become extinct, you've got to have procreation.
I'm sorry, but there's a crucial difference there. Just because a child is born does not mean that Irish society will survive.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about how that child is raised, the education that they receive, the support that they receive from their family and from their friends.
Of course, that's important. And in many, if you put your statement the other way around, and there's no procreation, then Irish society will become extinct.
Of course there has to be, Tony, but that doesn't, and, you know, that does not necessarily mean that often that whoever gives birth to the child is necessarily the best person, or indeed the best position to be able to raise the child.
I agree, it doesn't necessarily say that the child, yeah, go ahead.
Broadly speaking, I mean, all the studies you want to look at this will show that children have the best chance, statistically, and I know there are exceptions, but they have the best chance in life if they are raised by their married biological parents.
All right.
There's no study that countermands that conclusion.
Okay.
But equally, Tony, and I do have to take you up on this point, equally, Tony, there are many kids out there who are brought up by lone parents,
correct,
by widows, by widowers,
very well,
by adopted parents, by gay parents,
yes,
by grandparents.
I agree.
In a variety of family circumstances, who turn out and who make an enormous contribution to society.
And
for those, for all of those, if they are prepared to give a child a loving home, that option should be provided. The issue really here is about,
it's a red herring
because the legislation is going to come in. The issue will really be about how can we best ensure equality within Irish society, and how can we best provide for couples, regardless of what their sexuality is, that they can show that love and commitment.
If you don't want to discriminate, you must include the celibate brothers, the bridge partners who share a home together, threes if necessary, because otherwise
I do accept, that, for instance, if you talk about a situation for, say, two elderly brothers who may live together, that under inheritance rights, then certainly in those circumstances, if one dies, you know, the logic would be that the other should inherit the house, and provision has to be made in that regard. But two elderly brothers living together is a very different situation to a household unit where two people have committed, they deeply care and they love each other.
Why?
From the state's point of view, what is the difference? It's about a very simple thing called love. And the type of love that's exhibited between, two brothers, which is obviously there, is not the same as between two people who have obviously emotionally fallen for each other. Oh. There is a very different...
A thing called love. We'll leave it at that.
But why does that give you tax breaks?
Tony Allwright is a consultant and a blogger, I'm told. And thank you so much for joining us on the programme. And also, Councillor Malcolm Byrne is a Fianna Fáil member of Goree Town Council. Thank you both. Very interesting discussion indeed. Your own views on same...
Joe Finnegan on the voice of the Midlands, West and Border Counties, Shannonside, Northern Sound.